it is really fundamentally un-American.
No more!
Front war!
No more!
Front war!
No more!
Front war!
No more!
Broadcasting from the Gulag city of planet Earth, this is Cultural Baggage, the unvarnished truth about the drug war. My name is Dean Becker. Our engineer is Steve Nolan. Well, again, this week and next week, the mothership is in pledge drive, so we're sending to the Drug Truth Network a best of. It's the best of those statements pointing out the worst of this seemingly eternal drug war. First off, I want to send out a message to Al Giordano, the publisher of Narco News, located on the web at www.narconews.com. That's NARCONEWS. It seems that after numerous threats and the assassination of his friend, Al will no longer be reporting from somewhere in America. His website will remain online for future generations to see what an attempt at freedom is like, and to serve as examples of free speech. Al, we all salute you, and we name you this week's Cultural Baggage Hero of the Week. Although Al was a guest on our show only a couple of months back, I think it appropriate that we hear some words from this man who has been driven from the field of journalism by the forces of prohibition.
You hear the talk from people like Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld or even Colin Powell, who are now saying that any national liberation movement is not only terrorist, but also narco. Carlos Castaño, he's the head of the right-wing paramilitaries in Colombia, and they're the ones that have operated with support from the Colombian military and from the United States government and from United States banks, as we've documented on Narco News, who've laundered their drug profits for them. Yes, they very truly are terrorists, and they are narco traffickers, but the interesting thing is they're the ones who get the support of the state. The United States government calls them a terrorist organization, but then looks the other way as United States taxpayers' money is going to protect them as they conduct their campaign of terror, of massacres of the civilian population, including women, elders, and children, and of basically saying that anybody who is not on the side of the super capitalist point of view is a terrorist. They are the shock troops of state-sponsored terrorism, and the United States government continues to look the other way.
I asked Al about a suit he had won against Citibank, whereby he had described the bankers as narco-traffickers.
Banamex, the National Bank of Mexico, which is now part of Citibank, did sue us back in 2000 for publishing true stories, as the court concluded, about narco-trafficking activities on the coastal Mexican properties of the bank's owner, or former owner, Roberto Hernandez Ramirez, who is now a director of Citibank, or Citigroup. New York State Supreme Court ruled that that they'd throw the case out of court, that Narco News and all Internet journalists, by extension, now for the first time, have the same First Amendment rights as the New York Times or any other commercial media outlet.
Al Giordano has been my guest numerous times on the Cultural Baggage and 420 Drug War News shows. And Al is no lightweight. I'm certain that whatever forces compelled him to leave the profession are very powerful indeed. I would be lying if I didn't tell you of my concerns, my fears, after hearing this news from Mr. Giordano. It is my great hope that you have been taking my advice, that you have been writing those letters to your congressman, to your local papers, and expressing your concerns in this regard, because no one can stand alone. No one person, no one organization, no one media is going to change this. It will take you, the listener, the citizen, the participant in this American democracy, standing and demanding an end to this drug war. Anything less than that, well, the war goes on forever, just like the drug lords in Washington, Bogota, and London want. So I'm going to keep doing these shows, and I'm going to keep trusting that you are listening and that you are doing something so that I do not stand alone. Enough harping, enough worrying. Let's get back to work. Let's bring in San Ho Tree to tell us about the situation in Colombia.
To how many of these campesinos and farmers die in Colombia and the other countries?
It's several thousand a year now in Colombia because of this four-decade-old civil war they've been having down there. And it's a vicious, vicious civil war where you have two left-wing guerrilla armies and a right-wing paramilitary alliance. They've been going at it for decades, and they've committed some of the worst human rights atrocities in this hemisphere. And our drug war is basically fueling that. A lot of these groups are no longer fighting for ideological reasons. It's no longer the Marxist insurgency versus the right-wing paramilitaries. But in fact, these groups resemble gangs much more than ideological enemies. And they're fighting over turf. They're fighting over the revenues of the drug trade in that particular region. You know, a lot of the killing is actually revenge and cycles of vengeance and retaliation. And has much less to do with ideology.
San Ho Tree travels extensively up and down South and Central America on behalf of the Institute for Policy Studies in Washington, D.C.
Well, you mentioned Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld, and I'm reading a quote from him. The drug war is going to be won by our families, our churches, our schools, our doctors. Since as long as there is a demand, there will be a supply. And you can't solve this with a military solution. And I want to ask you, how can he be so right and yet so wrong?
Well, Rumsfeld's an enigma. He's been very much on the record over the years as being a skeptic of supply control strategies in terms of the drug war. And I believe that he personally does not believe in the drug war. In fact, I have it on very good authority that he's, you know, refused to sign certain deployment orders saying it's not a military function and we're not going to get involved in this. At the same time, he's part of the administration, and the administration has put a lot of emphasis on the drug war as being one of their main points of engagement with Latin America. And so he's got to be a team player. So on the one hand, in fact, the week before he went to Colombia, about 2 weeks ago, he told a town hall meeting at the Pentagon that he thought that, you know, this policy of eradication of opium poppies in Afghanistan was not going to succeed, and that, you know, it was very counterintuitive. The more you fought it, the more valuable it becomes. So he gets it, but at the same time, he's got to play ball with the rest of the administration.
I don't quite know how to put this, but are the American people hypnotized? Can they not see this? What power is it that these politicians wield, or are they all just stuck in some sort of quicksand they can't get out of?
Well, take a look at it from the point of view of the legislators. All right, a lot of them are quite ignorant about this issue, and they see illegal behavior. They see people growing illicit crops. They see people using illegal drugs. And so their natural instinct is to say, well, you're doing something illegal. We want you to stop, and therefore we're going to escalate law enforcement. And it's kind of a reflex action. A lot of them, you know, know better, but many of them still fall into this. Now, what happens when you increase law enforcement in the face of a prohibition economy? Here's where it gets tricky, right? Because when you escalate in law enforcement, the people you tend to capture tend to be the people who are dumb enough to get caught. No offense to anyone who's been busted out there, but, you know, the slang on the street is that the dealer who uses loses. You get careless, you get sloppy, you get apprehended. And so the people we tend to miss when we escalate law enforcement tend to be the people who are the most efficient, the most adaptable, the most innovative. They stay one step ahead of the law. So for decades, we've been selectively breeding super traffickers, right? We've had a policy, an unintended policy of artificial selection for the most efficient drug traffickers out there. And so we can't hope to win a war on drugs when our policies see to it that only the most efficient operations survive. And not only do they survive, but they're richly rewarded because we've done two things to help them. Number one, we've taken out the competition for them. We've rounded up the little fish. And number two, we've tried to constrict the supply while the demand remains constant, thereby driving up prices and profits for these people. And so what starts out as a knee-jerk, you know, good intention, you know, drug dealers, traffickers are bad. We got to stop traffickers. So politicians fall into this trap, and it gets worse and worse.
Sanjo is so right. Let's talk about drug addiction. Let's talk first about Arnold Schwarzenegger, and let's talk about Rush Limbaugh's addiction. Arnold described himself as an occasional user of marijuana and steroids, smoking pot a few times a week. He said it was no big deal. Now, I don't know how long he smoked or if he still does, but the point I would like to make is that we have a fairly average pot smoker a few times a week, and yet his life has not been destroyed. He went on to become Mr. Universe, a very successful, if not talented, actor, and now the governor of California. Rush Limbaugh, pretty much at the opposite extreme in the drug war in some regards, he was using daily heavy doses of OxyContin and other drugs. And Oxy is basically the same as heroin, except you know what's in the bag. Now, Rush was able to cover all the bases. You know, he performed at his peak every day on his radio show. He had to accept awards, give speeches, meet and greet the wealthy and the connected, and all the while, he was a junkie, doing cigar boxes full of pills. Now, was Rush dangerous? Well, nothing would indicate that. Was he stealing to support his habit? Well, of course, as a multimillionaire, even at black market prices, he could afford it. So what I'm saying is, it is a lie. Every aspect of the drug war is a lie. For almost 89 years, we have fought an ever-escalating war on our own people. We have given over control of much of our lives, expecting miracles, and receiving only the nightmare of the drug war. We are upside down, swimming to the bottom, gasping for air and damning that which destroys us. And of course, it's our own ignorance. The American public has been rode hard and put up wet so many times, they accept the continual assault on their rights as a necessary company policy. Let's never forget, we do have real, valid, solid documents in place like the U.S. Constitution that do rule the day here in the U.S., and we can never stand down from speaking the truth or we are doomed.
This is Mark Greer, Executive Director of DrugSense. To end the drug war, visit MAPINC.org. That's MAPINC.org. Get active, stay aware, stay informed, and let's bring an end to this nonsense.
Not many people know, and hell, I've probably never made mention of it before, but the name Cultural Baggage originally was the name of a rock band that I played drums for. And I'm going to torture you with a bit of one of our songs, Stash of Bags.
I live my life trying to make the score. Had to borrow and steal, been begging for more. You can go buy a dime or pick up an eight ball, but you can't keep your money. No, you keep climbing the wall. If I only had a stash of bags. By my spoon, clean my rig all day long. The cops, they all want me. The dealers want me dead. So I gotta lay low for a while in my woman's bed. If I could make a big score, I would vanish today and give up the crime.
okay. I hate to admit it, but yes, that was me on drums. But I thought it was some good work from Stuart Crone on guitar, keyboards, and vocals. And that was Sherry Bell with some great bass. And as we close out the show, I'm going to torture you a little bit more with another song from that same crew called Color of the Rain. So let's change the subject just a bit. Justice. What is justice in America? And who should know more about justice than a judge? Well, next up we're going to turn to Judge James P. Gray, the author of Why Our Drug War Has Failed and What We Can Do About It, a judicial indictment of the war on drugs.
I am a judge, a sitting judge in Southern California in Orange County, and have been for 19 years. And based upon this experience, it is just absolutely clear to me that what we are doing with regard to our policy of drug prohibition is not only not working, is not only hopeless, but it is harming people so drastically that it has to be changed. So I actually felt so strongly that about 11 years ago I held a press conference on the steps of the courthouse in Orange County, setting forth my views that as I just expressed, and then basically started clipping newspaper columns and listening and learning and the rest, and I did write a book. The book, as you said, Why Our Drug Laws Have Failed and What We Can Do About It, the subheading is A Judicial Indictment of the War on Drugs. And it's not only me as a sitting judge, but I also quote another 40 judges from around the country, including some from Texas, about their views. The first half of the book really will make people angry, or it certainly should if they have any blood flowing through their veins. I quote numbers of ways as to how we are harming ourselves. It's a civil liberties disaster. We've lost more of our civil liberties because of drug prohibition than anything in the history of our country. We have leading the world in the incarceration of our people. And you talk about minorities, blacks. I mean, it's just absolutely outrageous what we have. This is not my country in doing things like this. More blacks in jail and prison than in college, for heaven's sake, from between 18 and 30 years of age, etc. But the second half of the book will really give people hope. We have numbers of viable options that can and are being successful in other places around the world in addressing these various difficult issues. And we must simply change our approach to go over to things that work instead of this mindlessly punitive thing that, by the way, has resulted in enormous prison industrial complex. You talk about a cash cow, but there are only about five groups of people that are winning the war on drugs. Everyone else is losing. But in my view, if we were to make these drugs available, not illegal, for adults, no one's talking about children here, but for adults, we would reduce the drug consumption and also, of course, enormously reduce the crime and the other harms that go along with it. In alcohol prohibition, we had an enormous problem with regard to bathtub gin. They had really impurities in there. It would attack the nervous system. It could kill you. It could attack your brain cells and the rest. Those problems absolutely went away once we repealed alcohol prohibition. The same thing's going to happen with regard to these other sometimes dangerous and addicting drugs, but bring them back under the law and get the crime out, get the purity up, get the strength where people know what they're doing, and then they at least know what they're taking. And then, of course, and again, I'm in the criminal justice system and have been all my adult life, hold people accountable for what they do. You know, if somebody's going to drive a motor vehicle under the influence of, you name it, alcohol, methamphetamines, marijuana, it doesn't matter, hold them accountable for what they do, because that puts your and my and our safety at risk. That's the secret. Hold people accountable for what they do, not what they're put into their bodies.
A friend of mine, the head of Texas Normal, former police officer Howard Wooldridge, has done a study which shows that in Texas alone, police officers and DPS and so forth spend more than 1 million man hours with their ass in the air looking under car seats and in dashboards for marijuana. Now think of all the rapists and child molesters and murderers that go driving by while they're looking for a harmless bag of marijuana.
One sense, the reason it perpetuates, is basically this prohibition is around for 90 years. It's the same concept as nobody wakes up in the morning and says, why is the sky blue as opposed to green or yellow or pink? It's always been blue, so that's just the way it is. And that's very much what we're having now with the war on drugs prohibition, is people don't even question the basic concept of the approach to these dangerous drugs being prohibition. They think that's what's just set in concrete, and you can't change it, because like you can't change the color of the sky. And what we're doing in reform is getting people to look up at the sky and say, you know, it could be a different color. There are more ways to approach dangerous drugs than simply the prohibitionist model. And that's what we have to do, is basically wake up the people to the idea that there's more than one way to approach dangerous drugs, and this way we're doing now is certainly detrimental to everybody and everything.
This was Officer Howard Wooldridge speaking, and he's the guy that was named Hero of the Week just last week for his trek across the country on his horse Misty, like Paul Revere shouting, "Prohibition is evil. Prohibition is evil."
You understand that there's so much peer group pressure to continue prohibition, that for an officer to stand up and say, you know what, this isn't working, we need to get rid of prohibition, it's career suicide. The only reason I can do it is I'm retired.
Now, speaking of cops, I'm sure you've heard the story of the lone Coleman, Tom Coleman, the man responsible for arresting 10% of the black population of Tulia, Texas. Well, next up, we're going to bring in the defense attorney who worked so hard to free those people in Tulia, Jeff Blackburn.
Show people this is the result of numbers-driven law enforcement. Innocent people get convicted. That the war on drugs is a war on civil rights. That drug law is civil rights law. These are the people that most need civil rights. Believe me, when you're criminally accused, you need civil rights and you need the Bill of Rights more than anybody else. And that drug enforcement policy in this country is the number one pressing critical civil rights issue confronting not just African Americans, not just Hispanics, but every single American that cares about the basic constitutional setup that we claim to live under here. Drug law is the cutting edge of the whole process. And what Tulia, we hope, those of us that have been working on this case for all this time, myself and Randy Credico from the William Kunstler Fund, what we hope is that through this case we can show that this is not just a drug case, this is a civil rights case, and in doing so that every drug case in this country right now, and certainly every drug case in Texas, is a civil rights case. We've got to think differently as a people about what these prosecutions are really all about and what they do.
Okay, I threatened you with it, and it looks like we're going to have time to play Color of the Rain, but first I want to thank the guest for this evening, Mr. Al Giordano, Vaya con Dios, mi amigo, San Ho Tree, Judge James P. Gray, Officer Howard Wooldridge, and Attorney Jeff Blackburn. Okay, the song, Color of the Rain, has a second title, The End of the Journey. And what's it about? It's about dying. It's about that instant when your body hits the ground and perhaps you have a second to reflect on what you might have done.
Smile and just say goodbye. Feel the color of the rain. This second seems so slow. Very deep inside my brain. I know I could have done a lot. I should have done some more. Time now stands guard forever. And so much is left in store. I feel there's something there left behind. Somewhere now I am still alive. Success or failure that needs to thrive. Get on to feel it, the joy. The joy.
this week, I'd like to add, for God's sake, for the children's sake, for the sake of this nation, get involved in the effort to end this abysmal and totally hopeless war of drug prohibition. And as always, I want you to remember, because of drug prohibition, unlike Rush Limbaugh, you don't know what's in that bag. So please, be careful. For the Drug Truth Network, and on behalf of my technical producer, Steve Nolan, this is Dean Becker for Cultural Baggage, the unvarnished truth. This show is produced at the Pacifica Studios of KPFT, Houston.